All right, back in the Young Turks. Oh, look at this, Grace Mulridge, Brett Ehrlich.
Okay. This is going to be fun.
Good luck, everyone.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely fun, absolutely good luck. Buckle up, brace for impact. okay.
Gird up your loins.
Or that.
Don't.
So two tweets real quick. Ruth Iverson says, why don't these rich polluters realize they live on this planet too? And no, but to be fair, Ruth, the Koch brothers only have $40 billion apiece. They got to get to 41, otherwise how will they compete with the eight other richest people in the country?
Yeah. And they live above this planet, slightly above. Most of their high-rises and you know, nice areas that they clean up around them. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The
well,
air feels very nice up there.
Yeah.
That in the case of the Koch brothers, David Koch, that is literally true. He lives in a high-rise on Park Avenue. And in fact, there was a whole movie made about his apartment building in Park Avenue. And then he does a wonderful job of taking care of New York. He, to be fair to him, contributes to the hospitals and mainly to the theater that he goes to. And so all the sophisticated people in New York are like, oh, I went to the Lincoln Center. Oh, I mean, the Koch Center. I do adore the Kochs. I mean, the planet is melting. But still, we had a brilliant time at the opera earlier today.
La Boheme. They only get, like, it's a better opera the more silent letters it has in it.
Yes, Edwin. Oh, no, there it is. Okay, I had lost contact. Okay, Dan Grigori writes in, I love you guys for actually discussing America's water problems. Nobody else is. This is why independent media matters. Thank you, Dan. So, appreciate it. TYTnetwork.com/go to support that independent media and hire more journalists. In fact, there it is. Oh, whoa, what is this? 1.320, we get to 1.5. You get more spectacular reporters and analysts. $10 given by Casper in Denmark.
Nice.
Yes. What? $27 from Noemi in California. That's also the name of Dave Kohler's mom, random fact.
No.
Yes. Amy.
Oh, I thought he was born from a cloud one day.
No, it's actually Noemi. And Joseph from Colorado gave $127. So thank you to all of you guys. We appreciate it. Look, I'm going to actually tell you one other part of the campaign now, which is fun. Okay? So we're doing a campaign called IMTYT. We did this last time. We did a fundraiser. You guys helped build the studio. In fact, you completely built it. We took the money that you gave and turned it into this. This is the Nick Wilde chair. The cameras are named after some folks. We're still doing that for the TYTnetwork.com/GoFund. That's to hire more journalists, and you could participate in that. We would love it. But one of the other things we did last time we want to do this time around is show you guys and have you be our voice as well. So we're having you guys submit videos, and then if you tell us why you're TYT, why you like the idea of TYT, why you want to support it, and if we like your video, we will put it in a compilation. And so sometimes when people ask us, what are we, instead of showing me and Anna, Brett, Grace, and all these folks, we're going to show you guys. And so speak from the heart, whatever you got in terms of why you like the show or the idea and why you think that you're part of this movement. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'm going to leave it right there. And so it's hashtag IMTYT. That's the campaign. And so there's three arguably simple steps to submitting your video. Shoot your short video, maximum 1 minute, upload it to YouTube as an unlisted link, and then send an email to us at yimtyt, that's the question why, yimtyt@gmail.com, and include the link to your YouTube video, the one that's unlisted, the one you made, and then fill out the terms and conditions once we send you that after we get your video, because if you don't do that, we can't put the video up on air. So I loved it last time, and people gave great answers, and it energized us and made us feel like, that's why we do the show, because that's what they got out of it, that's what we love. And there's not a lot of people doing IMCNN videos, I want to hear from you guys, and we want to show you guys off, and we're super proud of you. Thank you for helping build the studio, helping us win every award we've ever won, for having the audience that we have, that's you guys, for making us the largest online news show. Thank you for helping us hire reporters who are breaking stories nonstop, and thank you for participating in this.
I like the YIMCNN. It's like I'm CNN because I had a layover at an airport and it was on. CNN.
I wanted someone to read the news to me from a teleprompter without any emotion or showing that I care at all about the news.
Yeah.
I am CNN.
Yeah, well, I'm CNN because I wanted to listen to Wolf Blitzer read like there was no punctuation.
I am MSNBC because I am totally confused as to who I am.
Oh.
I am a conservative in the morning, kind of a progressive at night, and in the middle.
That's the Sphinx riddle from like,
I know, right?
From Oedipus.
And I'm Fox News because I'm a blonde, hot, straight girl.
That's probably the most accurate one of all. And I make you remember 1955.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay.
All
I
right.
believe we're going to get some interesting videos on this IMTYT campaign. Okay. All
Should
right.
we get into it?
Let's do it.
Okay. Daniela Vargas is a 22-year-old undocumented resident of Jackson, Mississippi, who is currently being detained by ICE. This comes after she spoke out against the detention, also by ICE, of her brother and her father. So let's take a look at some video of Daniela.
Today, my father and brother await deportation.
But moments later, 22-year-old Daniela Vargas was apparently targeted by ICE, getting pulled over after leaving the event with her friend.
Two vehicles zooming up behind you and turning on lights like inside of their car, like undercover like vehicles, and then rushing out and just being so rough.
So the detentions of her father and brother happened on February 15th, and then she spoke out this past Wednesday, and following that, she was detained. A little bit more about Vargas's story. Vargas emigrated to the United States from Argentina more than 15 years ago and was previously protected from deportation by Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, an Obama administration program offered temporary relief from deportation for younger immigrants brought to the United States by their parents. So she does have an attorney. Her attorney's name is Abby Peterson, and Abby says, quote, it could be retaliation. They had been reading about her in the news. They had seen her at this press conference. Maybe they didn't want to hear it anymore. Maybe I'm mistaken on that. But common sense would certainly imply that's what happened. ICE has released a statement, and they have said, quote, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, took Daniela Vargas, 22, an unlawfully present Argentinian citizen, into custody March 1st during a targeted immigration enforcement action in Jackson, Mississippi. And then they concluded the statement and goes on basically to say ICE does not conduct sweeps or raids that target aliens indiscriminately. And now the next step for Vargas is that she will be processed and face an immigration judge. Do you guys agree with what we're hearing from her attorney? Do you think that this is retaliation?
I love the attorney who's like, you know, this could be retaliation because she spoke out against the government and was instantly arrested for it. She's the kind of person who's like, so why are all these drops coming down from the sky? Well, it could be that it's raining.
Yeah.
Like, that is what happened.
So you don't think the wording is strong enough from her attorney?
I mean, she's an attorney. She's obviously got some kind of approach that she's trying to take. She has a strategy. But, like, this seems very on the nose to me, a little too on the nose.
Yeah, let me go way, way further. They have begun to target their political opponents.
Yeah.
So, and they're not actually hiding it. If you listen to what Grace read you from the ICE statement, they say, we do not, here, I'll quote again, ICE does not conduct sweeps or raids that target aliens indiscriminately. They say this was a part of a routine targeted enforcement operation. So they targeted her. We didn't say that, they said that. And just think about it logically for a second. So you're telling me their ICE is like wandering around random states and they're like, where can we, which car can we pull over, which car, I don't know, let's pull this one over and see what happens. Oh, look at that, there's a person in the car who was just giving a political speech against the administration and she happens to be an undocumented immigrant.
Yeah.
What a break we got!
And, Jenk, to that point, the detentions that she was speaking out against to her father and her brother was from a raid by ICE on their home. So that's as targeted as it can get. They went into the Vargas' home to apprehend her father and brother.
Right, like they're saying, we targeted her because she pissed us off. Like it's
they're
pretty
saying
much, yeah, that, like there is no between the lines.
Yeah, so, but, okay, so she's undocumented, and some of you out there might think, well, okay, well, she had it coming. She shouldn't have, you know, when she was 7 years old and her parents were bringing her from Argentina, mm-hmm. she should have been like, hey, mom, dad, I'm going to be the adult here and say we shouldn't go without papers. Okay, Or you think, I don't care that it wasn't her fault. I don't care that she didn't grow up in Argentina. She grew up here. And then every other way she's an American. I don't care. She's undocumented. She's got to go. Okay. I hear you. I don't agree with you, but I understand, right? But what you can't say is that they're not targeting their opponents because they just told you they're targeting their opponents. So she was targeted because she was going around making speeches about how this is a bad policy proposal. They didn't pick her out of thin air. Like they said themselves, it was not indiscriminate. It was to discriminate. It was to target her. So you make speeches against against the Trump administration, and if they got any reason, in this case she's undocumented, you're gone. They're going to kick you out of the country. Now, if you're over-the-top right-winger or a 15-year-old troll, you're probably giddy about that. Like, ha, 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 finally an authoritarian regime, right? But for the rest of us, that is deeply, deeply disturbing and un-American.
Yeah, and there's that. If you go back to what Trump's been kind of signaling in his speeches, he said that we're going to go after the bad dudes and not the good guys. And so if he's going after, you know, Daniela Vargas, it seems like what they're saying is true. He's like, we're going after her because she's a bad dude. And it's like the only thing she's done is like messed up her paperwork in her DACA renewal. Like that's what she's doing. She owes $475. And is that their definition of bad dudes? Are they expanding it to people who are like bad at releasing paperwork? Because like it seems like you guys are also really bad at releasing paperwork too.
And also just to that degree in the press conference, she is incredibly, she speaks very highly of the government. She's a self-described dreamer. She wants to become a math professor. Like this is not, if we're taking out the bad dudes, she is not one of them. There's nothing aside from, I guess, an outstanding ticket for her to be considered a bad dude. It's just absolutely shameless what's happening to her.
And by the way, the paperwork, that sounds like regulation. That sounds like over-regulation, doesn't it?
So she's being saddled by regulation.
So now they sent mixed messages on whether they're targeting just people who have committed felonies or misdemeanors or whatever. And then, but now they're not. No, if you're undocumented, so that whole idea of rounding up 10, 11 million people, yeah, one at a time. But first they start with people who are their political opponents. And then they'll work to see, because now there's no standard anymore. It's not a felony. It's not a misdemeanor. They're saying if you're undocumented, that is by definition a crime. So we're going to round you all up. And by the way, so that's the undocumented immigrants. And again, I know some of you have no sympathy because, you know, you think, oh, if they don't have papers, they're not humans like me. Whatever. Okay, we can disagree on that. What if you're a political opponent of Donald Trump and you broke some other law? And jaywalking, or you were speeding, or you had two beers instead of one, or you name it, 1,000 other things, or you didn't pay your taxes quite exactly right. I mean, Donald Trump is one to complain, right? But any violation, they've just signaled to you, if you're a political opponent, by the way, either on the left or the right, and there are plenty of opponents on the right for Donald Trump, we just told you we round up our opponents.
Right. Even the process of saying bad dudes, there's been criticism of ICE because what they've been able to do frequently is just kind of label someone a gang member. And folks follow up and say, what is the process? Like, what is your backup for saying someone's a gang member? And they just don't have to present anything. They can just, having said, as ICE, this person's a gang member in absence of any other, it's like a get into jail free card. Is when they label someone as a gang member, and they've been doing that with folks, and it's really tough. So it's this very slippery thing that we've been trying to pin down as to what constitutes a bad dude that they're going after, and then you see a quote like this that sounds so Trumpian. ICE does not conduct sweeps or raids that target aliens indiscriminately. It's like that weird circular logic. It's like they're aliens, so I can't be indiscriminate. I can discriminate against them because they're aliens.
Yeah, and I don't want you to get me wrong. I don't mean they're going to, if you were jaywalking or you broke any kind of minor law, they're going to throw you out of the country. They can't do that if you're a U.S. citizen. But they can put you in jail. It's called selective enforcement. So if you're a Trump ally and you're jaywalking, you're fine. Nobody's going to bother you. But if you're a Trump opponent and you're undocumented, you're thrown out of the country. If you're a Trump opponent and you have a misdemeanor, maybe as a Trump ally, you wouldn't be prosecuted. As a Trump opponent, we're going to throw the book at you and try to get you in jail as much as possible because we don't like people speaking out against us. Look at what we just did to that girl right there. She spoke out against us, and we arrested her immediately after the speech and threw her out of the country.
Trumped up charges. Hashtag.
All right. Forward. A Tibetan women's soccer team has been denied U.S. visas so they could... Let me take that back. That's not what happened. A Tibetan women's soccer team has been denied U.S. visas for their participation in a soccer tournament in Texas. So a little bit more about what's going on. The team, Tibet Women's Soccer, had planned to take part in the Springs Dallas Cup tournament for young players and was invited by organizers to stay with local players in the tradition of several previous diversity programs. Something worth noting about this specific tournament is that it is a boys' soccer tournament, and they were invited as VIP guests, again, as a showing of diversity, which is something that this tournament takes very seriously. The team captain, Jemang Chatso, says, quote, "What they said is we don't have strong reasons to go to Dallas, but I think this is not the reason for them to reject us. We think the reason is they think we might run away when we reach there." Their coach is from New Jersey. Her name is Cassie Childers, and she has said that the experience left her feeling disgusted and ashamed of my country, noting that it cost the team $3,520, half of its yearly budget, plus travel expenses simply to apply. They weren't trying to immigrate, she says. They were trying to play soccer. For their part, the White House has not commented. The State Department said it could not comment on individual visa applications and did not immediately have a response about the White House's policy towards Tibet. Now, this hasn't been the first time that players have been denied entry or had a trouble getting to Dallas. There have been other players that have been denied before, but worth noting is that not to this volume. An entire team has not been denied visas before, so that's why this has become such a news story.
So they actually love America. They said this is our only chance to represent our country in the greatest country on earth. And I get why. I mean, first of all, I love the country, but why do they love it? They don't even live here. Well, look at this Dallas Cup tournament that they got invited to. It's for young players. They have a Muslim Jewish team from Israel that comes in. Mm-hmm. They have a Catholic Protestant team from Ireland that comes in. They're bringing this Tibetan team. See, that's why people love us. For the ones that do. And for them, we've been a beacon of hope and opportunity and bringing people together. In their neck of the woods, they might be judged for being Tibetan and hence not have rights. But they look here and they go, look, that's the Muslim and Jewish team from Israel playing together. And America welcomes that. And they bring Protestants and Catholics together and they don't care that we're Tibetans. Now the message we send them is, oh no, we're just kidding. We really care about your ethnicity. And so if you're from Tibet, whether it's because of political situation with China, whatever it is, no, we now are not welcoming, and we're not the country you thought we were.
Don't agree. Can you imagine the fallout in America if these 15 Tibetan soccer players are allowed to go to a soccer tournament? And not just that, I read their itinerary. They also plan to go to Six Flags. Six Flags!
And a Dallas Mavericks game.
What's that?
And a Dallas Mavericks
game. I didn't even know about that. I'm going to leave. I'm going to enlist in something.
I think it's a Six False Flag operation.
I love what the screening process must have been. It's like, it says here, one time you used your hands during a game. Rule breaker. Stay in Tibet.
So the only thing that I would say about this is that they said that the U.S. Embassy officials said they did not have a strong enough reason to go to Dallas. And the only reason that I can see to that degree is that they're not competing in the tournament. They're not even in the age group. The age group is 16 and under, and it's a boys' soccer tournament, and they are not participating. It's more like VIP guests, which I know that it's really important for this specific tournament to celebrate diversity. So to that degree, yeah, I think it's great. But I do also understand why the U.S. Embassy was asking, you're not even going to be playing? I mean, I guess they're doing like scrimmages and they're going to be participating with other teams, and it's way more of a symbolic gesture than it is for the specific, we want the gold. But I do see that there is cause for them to ask questions about their visit.
Right. Yeah, they can do that. I get it. But it's just like, no one would care if they came here and were in the parade. You know?
The reason why this is a story is because they were denied visas.
Yeah.
If they had been granted visas, we wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Well, Grace, if you love Trump so much, why don't you marry him?
I get it. Like,
I mean, he has, like, lesbian haircuts, so maybe.
I didn't say it. Go back to her. Okay. Go back to her.
Okay. So, no, look, so this is not part of the Muslim travel ban or anything like that, although, of course, I'm sure there's some folks out there who are Trump supporters like, well, you can't have, like, those dangerous Muslims from Tibet coming in. They're not Muslims. Okay. And a lot of them are citizens of India. So then you're like, wait a minute, now, are we banning Indians and citizens of Nepal? What in the world's going on here? Now, you can deny visas. Visas have been denied in the past. That's why you apply. By the way, per person, it costs them $160. And that's a ton of money for them, a ton of money. They spend $3,520, which is half their yearly budget, to just apply, not to come here, not the plane tickets, not all that, just to apply for a visa. So, yes, we are within our rights to reject any young people who believe in our country from coming here. Okay? Yeah. If we had specific actionable intelligence, hey, we found out they're looking to defect, they're going to come here and they're going to stay. Okay, I get it, and that's why you go through an application process. But it goes to, who are we? If we're the kind of people who reject these folks, why, and what does that say about us? And so, yes, they can do it. What we're saying is they shouldn't. What made America great was that we were open to folks like this.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see, like, the way that geopolitics plays out through sports. Because, like, if you look at, you know, the Taiwanese teams, like, there is an entirely different flag that, Chinese Taipei, they're called, because of a very long, drawn-out process to figure out exactly what to call them so they can still compete, representing the island, but still not pissing off China. And so I see all that playing out. But there has to be a point where we all can kind of sit down, look at each other across the table and be like, let them go to the parade. They're on vacation. Let them have a vacation.
Yeah, and what the story comes back to for me is their young coach saying they weren't trying to immigrate, they were trying to play soccer. And I think that that's what the crux of this story is. Whether or not they were participating in the tournament, they weren't coming here to, you know, start a new life. This, to them, was their dream. They were saying this was going to be the trip of a lifetime. Again, we talked about their itinerary. Sounded like a grand time. And they're still speak so highly of the United States as the greatest country on earth, even though they're no longer going to be able to, you know, realize this dream that they had of coming here. I will say good news is that they have either a GoFundMe or an Indiegogo. I can never reconcile the difference between the two. That has raised the funds that they lost in getting these visas. So that's good. And I know that they're planning on doing another trip throughout India and participating through that. So at least there's a silver lining here.
Yeah. So we'll put that link wherever, you know, this video is. Hopefully if we find it. So last thing is, Brett might be right. It might be that they are, Donald Trump didn't know what the hell he was doing and messed up the one China policy when he called Taiwan, because Bob Dole gets paid by Taiwan. And Bob Dole's like, here, Donald, put Taiwan's on the line. Oh, okay, I like you guys. Oh, you like me? Then you're fantastic. You're the best. You're fantastic. You're tremendous. Right? And so this might be a way of saying to China, hey, listen, sorry about the Taiwan thing, but don't worry, we found these 15 young Tibetan women and we're going to kick their ass. Okay, so that's what might have happened here. Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Got them.
Okay, let's go forward.
Facebook is testing out new AI software that will help prevent suicidal users from carrying out a plan. So let me tell you a little bit about the threefold approach they're taking. One, they're using pattern recognition. It will check posts and then, if needed, make suicide or self-injury reporting options more prominent. The AI detection and reporting options, whether aided by friends or Facebook employees, are running as a limited test in the U.S. for now. And then the second thing that they're rolling out is Facebook has also created a new messenger tools in collaboration with the Crisis Text Line, the National Eating Disorder Association, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and other organizations that'll help at-risk users or concerned friends contact knowledgeable groups over chat, either directly from the organization's page or via Facebook's suicide prevention tools. And then lastly, the third thing is, if users see a troubling live stream, so this is for Facebook Live specifically, they can reach out directly to the person and report it to Facebook at the same time as shown above. It will also provide resources to the person reporting the live video to assist them in helping their their friend. I think this is really awesome that they're rolling out this technology, because we've talked about this before on Pop Trigger, Brett, where we see a lot of these Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, the live stream technology can be abusive and it can be abused by either people in the comment section or people that are feeling particularly lonely or vulnerable will go there seeking a connection. And sometimes it's hard to find a tangible connection. You're talking to people, but it's not really, and there's a chat. And I think that this is good in helping people who are feeling lonely and isolated get the help that they need. I wonder how it's going to work with AI technology, though, and we'll see how the rollout goes. Because I've been sad before, and I wonder what the intention is going behind here. Like, how is it going to test out exactly what language is definitely suicidal and what language is just, you know, your standard depressed grace language? I don't know.
Yeah. It's a little disconcerting if Facebook's like, are you okay, buddy?
What are the flags exactly?
Yeah. I'm sure that they are collecting information on you all the time when you're using that. And everyone that I've met over at Facebook seems to be like, not like, it's not the evil company. It seems like the people that are in charge of rolling out this stuff. This is heartening as opposed to disheartening. It seems optimistic as opposed to pessimistic. It seems like the kind of thing, at least it seems like they're trying to use their technology for good to help people, and I can't find a problem with that. I think it's watching the rollout, like what specific things are they looking for when you encounter a company that these companies use trial and error as a way to fortify their system. It learns off of making mistakes and finding successes. So, I mean, the intention seems great, and I hope that it is a successful program because that goal sounds like a good one.
Yeah, so in these stories, the online community is always super skeptical, and they're like, what's the real plan here? So they find out who's depressed, obviously sell them Xanax. Super obvious. No, I'm kidding. And here, I'm a little bothered by them judging my moods too much, right? Now, I'm not a depressed dude, so I don't know. What's the thing that's a downer? Maybe they'll sell me that. Yeah, it's a
hotline. Seems like you're too happy.
Yeah,
let's fix that.
Hotline for this guy's are like annoying the rest of us by being so damn happy.
Yeah.
So reporting people based on their, it's going to create some issues, no question, right? They're going to over-report, and the algorithm is going to pick out people who aren't actually suicidal, and then that'll become news stories. But overall, I agree with you guys. I think they're trying to do the right thing. And I think that it might actually be helpful and maybe even save a couple of lives. And so what I'm saying is they'll be imperfect, so cut them a little bit of slack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then if it turns out it's a debacle and they're just, Grace was in the mood for a little bit of red wine and chill out at home. Yeah.
Every night.
Yeah. These are cynicism tests for me, like to find out how cynical I am reading an article. Like right. For this, when I read this, there's part of me that just wants to be like, you know, well, Facebook, using it, if you use it long enough, it makes everybody a little suicidal. You know, like if they really want to help society, what they'll do is after enough time using Facebook, they'll kick you off Facebook for a while. You know, like there's a ton of ways we can improve people's lives. But, you know, if I'm having a good day, I'll read this and I'll say, you know what, that's great. Great job, Facebook. Way to look out for people.
And social media has just become such a community hub for so many people with people that they haven't met in person before. And so what I like about this is the outreach from the friends. I'm hesitant about the outreach from the corporation, from the company, and how that's going to be regulated, and we'll see how that rolls out. But I do like involving friends, even, you know, people that you chat with and people that you communicate with regularly on Facebook or on Twitter when they notice sort of bizarre behaviors. I've noticed bizarre sort of uploads from friends of mine before, and I've wanted to reach out to them. And it's nice that Facebook is saying, you should do that. We should be able to talk about this. If you think that a friend of yours is struggling with suicide or is struggling with mental health, then let us help you, give mm-hmm. you the tools to help that friend.
And this, it definitely seems like a company trying to address certain problems that have just arisen by around the nature of the services they provide online. Because something that Facebook has done, without question, is allowed people to be really, really mean to you all the time without you really necessarily being able to figure out who they are. When you're doing Facebook Lives, people go out there, young impressionable kids are out there trying to share their innermost thoughts because this seems like the kind of forum for that. And some of their friends have had success doing that. And random people just show up and tear them down. Facebook seems to have acknowledged that there are ways that their products can open folks up to dangers, and they're trying to address that. And I think that's really good. And the flagging procedure, a lot of folks have problems with flagging procedures no matter what platform it's on. They're asking questions like, well, why are you policing? This is a tool. Let it go. Let people use it the way they want. But I think Facebook's been pretty responsible in the way they have allowed you to flag things, but that doesn't mean they disappear. Mm-hmm. They go under review. There are processes put in place behind the scenes at Facebook as well as through third parties that allow it to be properly vetted to find out if the kinds of things that are being flagged are actually dangerous and nefarious or what have you.
I think Facebook should build a kickball algorithm. When you've spent too much time online, as Brett was alluding to, they're like, you must now go out and play kickball with real human beings. Please leave your computer.
And locate 12 other people to play kickball with you.
Do people still play kickball?
No.
Is that a thing that happens?
No. What is, like, I mean, maybe if you're a 12-year-old at recess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I would play kickball, but no one's invited me to.
As recently as 5 years ago, there were kickball leagues run by hipsters. They had the best time.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All around Silver Lake. They had, you'd have names like the Echo Park, like whatevers.
Ja'Cory says he's in one.
Ja'Cory's really? In one. That happens.
Of
People
course
People do
he
this
is.
All the time.
Of course he's. Of course there's a guy who works at TYT who's in a kickball league. Of course. Okay.
Hey, you guys want to go down play kickball?
Yeah.
All right. Next TYT campaign event. No. Office party. Kickball for everybody.
Oh, you're all about to get beat. I'm going to be so good. I'll train.
Okay, we got to take a quick break, guys. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, among the stories we have to dazzle you with, how can you find out if your wife or girlfriend is cheating on you? There's apparently an excellent way to find out. Come right back. All right, we got a lot more for you guys. We got tweets, we got things, we got stories. Libby writes in, yay, Grace Baldridge, rocking the news again. Straight, blonde, white female news anchors can suck it. that's what Libby said. Don't put it on me. I'm a derpy panda, writes in, this is America. If you're the wrong skin color, then you're bad by definition. Interesting. Jimmy Brandon says, if they're already going after undocumented immigrants that are their political opponents, who's to say they won't come for you? Well, Jimmy, obviously, I totally agree with you. And, in fact, we just got an update from Edwin, stage manager slash breaking news expert. And it turns out for Daniela Vargas, they are expediting her extradition. And they are not, apparently, according to Huffington Post, they're not going to give her a hearing. They're just going to immediately kick her out of the country.
Argentina.
So this is the new America, and you wonder why we say fascism. Okay, let's go get some, yeah. All right, let's hire more journalists. So these are the folks who've helped us recently. $27 from Beverly in Iowa, $27 from Hosea in Arkansas. That's an awesome old school name.
Mm-hmm.
And $127 from Robinson in Florida. Thank you, guys. Let me see where we are with tytnetwork.com/go. Okay. 321 there. Fantastic, guys. And post-game show coming up as well. sorry, a little bit of cough.
Get it out.
And we got Aggressive Progressive tonight at 9 o'clock. You guys know the first segment of Aggressive Progressive is free and live to everybody, so make sure you check that out. And the whole show is for members. Excuse me, guys. Francisco Flores and Jay Sherwood are our members of the day. All right, what's next?
All right. 7 Baltimore police officers have been arrested on racketeering charges. So they are accused of an abuse of power and also from stealing from victims. U.S. Attorney General Rod J. Rosenstein is talking about this. They are 6 detectives and a sergeant on the city's gun trace task force team. He says, quote, what is particularly significant about the allegations in this indictment is that these officers were involved in stopping people who had not committed crimes, not only seizing their money, but pocketing it. And then when I was referencing abuse of power earlier, this is what I'm talking about. Some of the alleged overtime abuses included one officer who claimed overtime for a day of gambling at a casino. Another officer was paid while vacationing in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, for a week. So there's a lot of gross misconduct going on here. A little bit about the investigation. The investigation stemmed from a drug probe conducted by the Drug Enforcement Administration. Baltimore Police Commissioner Kevin Davis said it was a difficult day for the city and a punch in the gut for his police force. But he said such crackdowns are part of change and would be applauded by his officers. To give you guys a little bit of context about the Baltimore Police Department and why there's such scrutiny on them, the overhaul stems from a scathing federal report on police operations issued after the widely publicized death of Freddie Gray, which I know we talked about here, in April 2015 while in police custody. So this has really come as a shock for the Baltimore Police Department, but I want to get a reaction from you guys. Were you shocked to hear about this?
It's the least shocking thing I've ever heard in my life. Oh, there's...
How do you think it's being handled, though? Yeah.
I think it was in The Wire.
Yeah. There's corrupt cops in Baltimore, huh? Well, that's interesting news. So, look, it's actually great news because the Justice Department did an investigation of the cops in Baltimore. At the time, you remember, conservatives were dismayed by that. They're like, oh, they just won't let the cops be cops. You know, just let them do what they got to do, and you're all over them, and you're investigating them, okay? And then they can't do real policing. And you remember at the time there was all these talking points about, oh, crime is going up because they won't let the cops do their jobs. No, they were seeing if there's any crooked cops. And so it turns out when they did an investigation, they found them. Now, these guys would pull over totally innocent people in Baltimore and would rob them. Literally, they'd be like, okay, I'm seizing your assets. They're like, why? There's no drugs on me. I didn't do anything wrong. Shut up. It doesn't matter. I'm taking it. They took from a couple $100. In one case, apparently, they took $200,000. By the way, you're going to get caught if you take $200,000.
Who's going to catch you? The police?
But that's why they do it.
Yeah.
And if you never investigate the cops, they get away with it. Now, as long as they're targeting people without much power, and most of the time it was people with almost no power, they did get away with it, and that's why they knew they could get away with it. But then they did stupid stuff that everybody's annoyed at, going gambling and then charging the department, going to Myrtle Beach for a whole week and charging the department. Well, even the department gets annoyed at that, so then that's, I guarantee you, part of the reason that they got busted. So,
yeah, and one of the worst offenders with regards to overtime pay, his salary was $85,000, and he received more than $83,000 in addition because of this false overtime pay that he was, you know, that he received, which is, to me, the gall to do this. It's just, it's absolutely shameless. I can't believe what I'm reading, the numbers here, because it's so much money, Cenk. That's what I couldn't believe.
But you know why, Grace? Because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And if you never do oversight of the cops, they will rob people blind, literally. And I'm telling you, one of the reasons they got caught is because you can rob powerless people all day long, but when they do the overtime trick, they're also robbing from the police department. So then the rest of the cops are like, maybe you crossed the line there. And even so, they've been doing this for a long time, and Baltimore never did anything about it until the U.S. Justice Department came in and did this investigation.
Yeah, this is what oversight does. This is what oversight is necessary to do. This is why you need you need watchdogs, you need folks to look after to make sure that these kinds of things don't happen. And when they do, you need to prosecute them. We're just looking for the bad dudes who are the police officers. The good ones, we're fine with the good dudes. We're trying to find the bad dudes. They're found. And listen, if the oversight's there and they don't find anything, great for you. But you need this kind of stuff. In the first hour, talking about the EPA having people there to look and make sure that we're protecting citizens. This is what this is for. And when folks say the government's overreaching and there's too much regulation and red tape to go through, we're not trying to stop you from doing things you should be doing. We're trying to stop you from doing things you shouldn't be doing because they're bad for people. And this is the kind of stuff that everyone should be focused on. And I'm glad that they caught these people who are doing bad things.
And also, I'm also glad that the police commissioner, Kevin Davis, has said that this is a good thing that happened. And that if you are a good cop in the Baltimore Police Department, you will celebrate the actions that the DEA then passed on to the FBI and then was also carried out with local officials. So I think that that is the silver lining here, is that from the highest order, you have the guy saying, no, what they did was correct. These were disgraceful cops. They should not be in our department.
Yeah.
So they also realized, in the midst of this investigation, studied the zero tolerance policy that the cops had in Baltimore for the community. Now, they had zero tolerance for anyone doing anything wrong in the community, which, by the way, they found out after studying it, it had almost no impact on crime. So they're like, oh, we're getting tough, and we got no tolerance for anything. Ah! And then did your crime rates go down? No. We just made ourselves feel better by doing this stupid zero tolerance policy, which robs you of any kind of human judgment. But for the cops themselves, they apparently had very high tolerance. Like, oh, yeah, you can go to Myrtle Beach, and you can go gambling, and you can rob that guy, and you can rob that guy. All right, now you robbed too many guys. Fine. After 18 tolerance, we're finally going to come, and after the federal government gets involved, finally come get you. One of the guy's names was G Money Gondo. I wonder if G Money cared about money. And, you know, I'm not saying a nickname is end all be all, but what these guys were doing was obvious. And it still took the federal government getting involved before the cops would regulate themselves.
I'm fine saying, like, I'm shocked to find out that there's bad people in the police force. I don't care, like, about going into it. Like, here my idea that I don't even need to push an agenda that says, you know, police can be corrupt. I don't even need to start there. I'm fine with stories like this to come up that say we were doing an investigation to make sure everything was okay. We found that there was something wrong. We're going through the process of justice. If we can apply things like investigate, base it on evidence, go through the process of justice and make sure that it's a just process, that's fine. I think we should apply that to the police force. I think we should apply that to everything, because I think if we're able to deal in like empirical processes like that, then we're going to get out of a lot of these like back and forth struggles that are really bogging folks down. Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine anybody could disagree with that. But it is the internet. Someone will find a way to disagree with Brett.
Yeah. I watched The Wire. There's good cops in The Wire. And what I think they should do next in Baltimore is set up a safe zone where everyone can do drugs safely, because that worked for at least 6 episodes that season.
And by the way, we have a good cop from Baltimore on the show tomorrow, Michael Wood, retired Baltimore police officer. He's awesome. Also one of the guys who started Veterans for Standing Rock. So, yes, there are definitely good cops. In fact, the two biggest heroes that are police officers that I know the stories of are both former Baltimore police officers. Michael Wood's retired, but Joe is down in Florida as a cop. In fact, he was part of Rick Scott's security detail, and I ran into him at the RNC. It was kind of surreal. Wow. He's the cop in Baltimore who turned in other cops that were beating the living crap out of a defendant. And now, that story doesn't speak that well of Baltimore, because the rest of the cops ganged up on him, would leave dead rats on his car, threaten his life. That's why he had to go down to Florida. But he was a great guy, and he was a Baltimore cop.
Yeah.
And that Facebook algorithm story, by the way, you got to check out the interview I did with Ramesh Srinivasan. He's a professor associate professor at UCLA, and he wrote a book about Facebook algorithms and YouTube and Google algorithms. 1.8 billion people out of the 7 billion people on Earth use Facebook, and there's never been more powerful entities in the history of the world than Facebook and Google. They both have about 2 billion people that use them. So the assumptions that go into those algorithms, which then determine so much of the information we get, the behavior we have, the friends we have, the power they have there, is amazing. Really interesting interview. That's at youtube.com/TYT interviews. Okay, let's keep going.
All right. Michigan has a law on the books that says that it is legal for a police officer to have sex with a prostitute and receive immunity during an investigation. But a new bill is proposing to ban that law. So Bridget Carr is a director of the Human Trafficking Clinic at the University of Michigan Law School, and she is now working with Michigan Representative Gary Glenn to draft a bill to get rid of the law. She says, quote, "The reason the law is structured the way it is because of the way the prostitution laws are written. So for law enforcement to have any power to investigate with immunity, they got all the power, and no one thought to go back and carve out a prohibition against sexual intercourse." She goes on, "It's not rampant, but it happens. And I think it says something about us as a community that we would allow this type of exemption for law enforcement, whether it's used very often or not." So as far as I've been able to research, Michigan is the only state that has this law on the books. And Bridget Carr was made aware of the law when she heard that Hawaii was phasing out this exemption. To me, this story comes back to sort of broad and vague wording in a law not being very precise when they're writing it up. I don't think that it was with the intention of allowing police officers to have sex with prostitutes for immunity, but that is, as a result, what has happened or what could happen.
Well, it apparently has happened a number of times. That's why they're acknowledging it. So this is another great example of one set of rules for you guys, another set of rules for us. Now, some of it might make sense. Hey, listen, you don't get to carry around a badge and a gun and get to pull it on people, and cops do because that's their job, right? But really, you're going to say, I mean, you don't get to have sex with prostitutes, but of course cops get to have sex with hookers. That's their job. Is it? No, I don't think it has anything to do with their job. It just, every once in a while, they want to have sex with hookers before they arrested them.
Yeah, there's, I get it. I get you're like, listen, when I'm undercover, I need to maintain my cover. I can't, in the middle of a human trafficking sting, like, say, oh, no, I'm not going to sleep with you. And then they'll be like, oh, you're obviously a cop. But I just think, like, in the process, you should be a better cop than to have to be like, nah, I had to sleep with her, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you could say, well, you know, I was undercover with these terrorists, and I had to blow up a building. Right. Otherwise, they would have realized I was a cop. I mean, 13 people died, but I mean, what could I do? They would have made me.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah, no, being an undercover cop is super tough. You're not allowed to do the coke with them. You're not allowed to have sex with hookers with them.
Every prostitution scene I see on Cops is like just when they exchange the money, then they go in. It's not like they exchange the money, they have sex, and then while the guy's like, all right, that was great, can we arrest her, please? Because I don't actually have the money for that.
Yeah, no, by the way, that we covered a story like that earlier on the show, because there are these laws, Michigan and Hawaii, like you said, and sometimes cops would go in, they'd have sex with the hookers, and then they'd arrest them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
what the hell? That's crazy. That's not any undercover investigation. You just want to have sex with them. And if you're investigating human trafficking, I think prostitution should be legal, so I think it's not that cops shouldn't be allowed to do it. It's that we should all be allowed to do it, right? But if you're investigating human trafficking as opposed to just run-of-the-mill prostitution, and you're like, well, you know, I was worried about these kids that are being trafficked, so I had to have sex with them. What? What?
Right.
That's even worse.
Like, do you really need to test the merchandise? Like that, because then you're reducing this person whose life is already hell to, like, now I just... it makes me feel gross.
Well, I know that the instances that you guys are speaking of are true and valid, but I think that it's worth pointing out that many of the officers that she spoke with were unaware that this law was on the books. So it's not something that is taught in police academies, like, just so you know, you guys can totally have sex with them. But it still is something that they need to re-examine. And what my hope would be moving forward with the bill is that not only do they ban this law, but they also look back at the wording with regards to human trafficking and protections for prostitutes and sex workers, because I think that the United States is really far behind protections for people who work in the sex industry, and that's not okay because everyone is a person. It's a human. It's human decency here, and so I'm hoping that that's what we can see, and then I'm also hoping that now Michigan will, you know, roll back this law. I can't imagine what the campaign ads for, you know, the people who want the law to stay in place, how would that look on local access Michigan TV? just say no so I can say yes. Like, what? No.
Maybe they run old episodes of T.J. Hooker.
Yeah, right? Just hanging on to the top.
Yeah. No, not that kind of hooker. Okay.
All right. Last story on cheating and orgasms.
Love this.
You're welcome. You're welcome, everyone. I'm not really sure how to intro this.
Just fake it till you make it.
Sure. So, are you going to cheat on your partner? Well, if you are a woman who is faking orgasms, according to a new study, you are a little bit more likely to be unfaithful. So, this research comes from the Human Female Orgasm as Evolved Signal. This is a study. And what they conclude is that the more frequently a woman fake orgasms, the more likely she is to cheat. What is going on here? So, researchers recruited a group of 138 females and 121 male college students. This demographic is very important, who were involved in heterosexual relationships. Women were quizzed on how intense and frequent their orgasms were, and the men were asked about how often they thought their girlfriends reached orgasm. All participants were also asked whether they had ever cheated on their partner and how likely they were to cheat in the future. Authors of the Human Female Orgasm as Evolved Signal study wrote, quote, fake orgasm was associated with female sexual infidelity and lower male relationship satisfaction. But the good news is that there is actually no link between a genuine orgasm and fidelity within women. So it's really just if you fake it. And also within the 138 women that reported in this study. And they were all of college age, which I do think is relevant when we come to a conclusion here.
So I like that you frame that as good news. So if women, if you're, men, if your partner is not having very many orgasms, don't sweat it. She's not likely to cheat on you.
Right.
Right. If she's just bothering to fake the orgasms, oh, watch out.
If she gives, it's weird because you give enough of a damn about him and his confidence to fake the orgasm, but not to stay with him. So like, but you're still stepping out. Like, I care. Yeah, you just don't really care about a genuine interaction with that with that person. That's what it is. You don't care about. We covered this on Pop Trigger. You're not communicating well in the relationship. You're not communicating well in the bedroom. You're like, all right, it's too much of a pain in the ass to actually talk to this person, or you know, it's too awkward to have that conversation that results in like constructive criticisms that lead to better sex. You're like, all right, I'm gonna fake it now, and I'm just gonna go get mine when the door's closed. So, which might be a healthy approach.
So my conclusion to this small sample size is that if you are not physically connecting with someone, let's say in the way of an orgasm, then you are less likely to emotionally connect with them in the way where you wouldn't want to cheat on them, where you care, that deep connection that you feel when you are both sexually connected with someone and you guys are like hitting on all cylinders. Does that work? Sure.
Yeah.
You are also emotionally connected and you are communicating, that bond is just not as strong when the sexual and physical connection is not there, then the emotional tie will also not be there. That's what I think from this study.
Yeah, not buying it.
What are you not buying, Cenk?
Yeah, because it's totally depends on your perspective. Because as a straight male, especially in relationships before I got married, the sex and the enjoyment of it was not at all connected to my emotional status with that person. I wasn't like,
good.
I couldn't stare deeply enough into your eyes.
Oh no, I meant
so
specifically.
So I'm not going to make it tonight.
I meant specifically like, for women, for the women question.
Okay,
I think that for women, the emotional, what I would discern from the study, the emotional tie plays a major important, like if they are physically connected to someone with an orgasm, then they will be more connected with someone emotionally as well. But I think it's very different.
But I don't know if it's. But I also don't know if it's the reverse, that if they have to have some sort of emotional connection to them in order to orgasm, that might not be the case at all.
Yeah.
He might be a hot guy and they're into it, and then they're like, yeah, but he's a schmuck. And
then
you know.
Also, question for you guys, what do you think is the relevance that these are all college-age heterosexual couples? Because that demographic for me is very interesting. Because I think when you're college age, you are more inclined to sort of want to play the field. I think it'd be interesting if they carried out the study between like 18 and 24-year-olds and then, you know, 35 to 40-year-olds and seen if there was still that correlation.
But there's kind of a control for it because it's just the difference between someone who's faking it and someone who's not. It's not that like, you know, it's not like, yeah, sure, more college-age people might be more inclined to cheat, but still the ones who are faking orgasms are more likely to cheat than the ones who are not faking orgasms within that group.
So I would say, I think that when you get older, I hope you are more comfortable with your body. Was that appropriate
that was it. That's
for
how
the
you
sex
do it.
Story?
Daughter of a preacher, man, doesn't know how to cross himself or was afraid to in this sex talk discussion.
In the sex talk. Hey, Dad. So I think that when you get older, when women get older and they discover their bodies a little bit more, because a woman's orgasm, a woman's sexuality is way more complicated than a guy's. Like, you have to figure it out. Is it, like, are you clitoral stimulation or internal stimulation? That
I am not familiar with either
okay,
of those
Okay, well, it, I'm just saying that it varies. It's not as simple as just like a pull and a tug. I've never touched a penis, so I'm just assuming that's what happens. But I think that when a woman gets older, that she's more comfortable to ask and communicate with what she wants, what works for her, and she has that experience of what works for her. So maybe I wonder if orgasms are faked less, but we don't have the, you know, the numbers here to see if that's true.
I've faked it.
Really?
Yeah, but the other way around. Like, I was done. Like, embarrassingly quick and safely. I just pretended I wasn't yet. And then later on, when I was like, all right, now I'm going to fake like a giant finale, even though that ended in act one. This has all been a facade. I did that, and I was like 22.
See, I wonder what that would have been in this study for guys that faked orgasms.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, I have a much simpler theory. That the people who are willing to fake orgasms are the ones who practice deception more.
Yeah, totally.
So, hence, are more likely to deceive you and sleep with other people.
Right, you're saying people who lie are more likely to lie.
Exactly.
Ah. Got it. Yeah, no, that makes
leave
sense.
It to me. Leave it to me. Leave it to a girl to just overthink it, being like, be emotional. If he didn't call her that day, then she's going to think about that. She's not going to be able to make it work for her. Jen, guys. Yeah.
Is that your impression of a girl?
That's what I think girls sound like.
I love it.
That's why I was single for
girl
so long.
Girl does impression of girl. Love it. So good.
Trump's
like, I do the dude ones like, duh, 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 duh. I'm a boy. I could just talk like one. Nope.
Trump's reaction to this story is fake orgasms.
Or the clitoris is fake news.
Yeah.
No? No one liked that one, huh? It's 519. I thought
hey,
we were
Brett,
safe.
Yeah.
The clitoris is not fake news, okay? Just letting you know that. It's not fake. It's real.
Yeah, and believe me, he's got no problems down there.
Yeah, I got no problems. I got Melania has 5-6 clitorises.
Oh, Jesus.
Every night.
I'm pretty sure we've come to an end. Okay.
So to speak. Unless we faked it.
Okay. So we're going to do a post game next, and I'm going to ask a very inappropriate question. To Grace about lesbian couples.
Awesome.
Okay. Very inappropriate. Sorry, but it has to happen.
Great.
That's in the post game. TYTnetwork.com/join.
Will you let me answer it before she does?
Yes.
Of course.
I would like to take a stab at it.
But
so
you're going
to
love my question.
And
you're going to say that is inappropriate, but totally appropriate. It makes sense. It is
Got
a question
it.
That had to be asked.
Got it.
Okay. So for the members, that's what's happening in the post game. Furthermore, later tonight, Aggressive Progressive members get all of that as well. TYTnetwork.com/join. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.